Hi everybody, and welcome to another Filmmaker's Choice episode of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. Unfortunately, we can't bring you any servings of George today. However, we are delighted to be able to treat you to a wonderful interview with writer-director Gage Oxley. Gage is the showrunner of the limited series, A Series of Light, which is an anthology of short films currently available on Amazon Prime Video. We've spoken to Gage previously, and you can find that episode in our podcast back catalogue. We have also reviewed Gage's prior short films, This World We Live In, and three-part short film anthology, Wretched Things, also available on Amazon Prime Video. You can check out those reviews by following the links in the episode notes or by heading to cameolaunch.com/reviews. Gage joined us to discuss A Series of Light and his filmmaker's choice short film pick, Baby, from music video director Wiz and starring Ben Whishaw. We talk motivations, inspirations, and challenges, both creative and pandemic-induced. Listen and enjoy. Joining us on the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast is Gage Oxley. Gage, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It feels like a lifetime ago.
I know. So much has happened since then, hasn't it?
Quite a bit.
Sure, there have been some world events that have come and gone. I can't remember what they are.
Yeah. You know, just little things. Nothing too much. How have you been?
Oh, well, we're all right over here, actually. Trying to shine some light on people doing fantastic work. Not least yourself. So we watched A Series of Light, and it is more than impressive. It's a feat that you actually managed to get them all done. I mean, I know we talked about the idea of doing a series of short films in the past, kind of joined together by overarching themes. But you actually managed to pull it off, so for that alone, well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it was quite a terrifying prospect when we started it. Mm. Because as you say, we had done something kind of similar in the past, but it was more in a film basis, whereas this is kind of a little bit more solidly television. So yeah, thankfully it all worked out.
Yeah, no, it's great, because the thing that struck me about it, obviously you're joining us as part of the Filmmaker's Choice segment that we've introduced into the podcast.
Yes.
And we'll get on to your pick of the short film that you want to talk about in a moment, but just kind of referencing that for a moment, there's a lot stylistically that it seems you've used as inspiration for the way you've approached the films that are included in A Series of Light. I mean, one of the themes that carries through the whole thing are things like not just issues of sort of sexual identity, but also things like adequacy as well. And that I thought was quite interesting in the way that was done, because you're able to then take the form of the human body from a sexual perspective, and on the one hand present it as an object of desire, but then do kind of like a heel turn and present it as an object of threat or fear. You know, there are moments where that sort of sexual imagery is weaponized, and that very same imagery is idealized in other moments as well. And I think that those are certain things that I noticed A Series of Light shared with the film that we're going to go on to talk about. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about what led you to the project? First of all, if you want to just kind of explain what the project is in full, because it's a little bit more complex than your average short film.
Yeah, I mean, the series is called A Series of Light, and each episode is very different. It's an anthology series, so each episode focuses on very different aspects of life in general. So we follow different characters from a celebrity, an actor who's kind of a bit washed up and is desperate for a change in his career, to an escort in a hotel room, to two lads in the 90s in Liverpool. You know, we follow loads of different people and stories, and just kind of drop in on them and see what's happening. And I think, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned the theme of adequacy, because I think that is something we were really keen to do. And in our previous work, we know that realistically our aim is to impact people. It's to get people starting to talk about something. And for me, I think the most exciting way of getting an audience member to feel something. Either it's fear or nervousness or anxiety, or kind of just starting questioning their beliefs, is through this kind of visual arousal, this stimulant that's just kind of like, you know, this is something that we typically associate with desire, but actually then just twist it and say, but why are you thinking this? Mm. What does this mean for other people around them or this person? Should you be idolizing these celebrities and these people? And so the series does kind of just generate a lot of those types of themes. But also I think it's a really fun series. I think it's like watching it, it's just, you know, watching it back, especially because we made this a year ago now on next to nothing. I think our entire budget was about £1,100, which is
for a six part
series. It's nothing. It's like a drop in the ocean. And we worked with some incredible talent, like brilliant actors from all across the UK. And actually for this time, you know, we were ahead of the curve with the pandemic. We got loads of people involved acting wise through screens, through Zoom calls, through loads of stuff like that. So the first episode, we worked with an actress called Alexandra Marlin, who's based in Los Angeles. And so we worked with her while she was in LA, and worked with a whole production team in LA who helped with lighting and camera, which was, you know, something we've never done before. And hopefully I think that's given us some skills in how to tackle filmmaking going forward, at least for the time being.
What were some of the biggest challenges of this in terms of getting a large slate of films done pretty much all at once? Because I believe the production process kind of ran into the lockdown period of time. How did you navigate that?
It did, yeah. It was really difficult. We started filming, I think we did on average about one episode a month. So we started with Greenlight, and we did it in order as well, just to help my mind, because I don't think I'd been able to cope with doing it all over the place. But yeah, we started in October, and the sixth episode, the final one, we started filming on the day that the UK introduced this lockdown, the nationwide lockdown, that night. And so the next day was our final shooting day of the entire series. And so we just missed out by 24 hours. So I'm still really bitter about it. But, you know, obviously we suspended filming, and we waited until it was safe to go back on set. I think it ended up being about three months later. But also we had to do our entire post-production process virtually as well, all remotely. So I had to make sure our post team had all the software, all the physical computer storage and space and like power, which was, again, an interesting challenge. But I think for me, and especially in the place that I am, you know, I'm wanting experiences like this, because I think, you know, if I can deal with this and get through it, I can kind of pretty much deal with a lot of other things. And so, yeah, it forced us to be creative in a lot of ways. It forced us to have to do things which, you know, we probably wouldn't have done if we had the time and the space to be able to properly make it. We got through it, and we released it in July. So it's on Amazon Prime in the UK and the US. And actually, I think it was a really great time to release it, because everyone's watching a screen. Everyone wants something new.
Absolutely. Now is a fantastic time to release something on
it really
on
was.
And I mean, because I know you've done previous films that you've gone onto Amazon Prime as well. Having a body of work that you can release, has that helped in terms of exposure in a way that you haven't really had that kind of access for previous productions?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is the one that's kind of really elevated us as an organization to say, look, we are here, we are making stuff, and we do exist. And I think the fact that we've got a whole series on Prime, and it looks quite, you know, something that you would expect to see on Prime, which is, you know, something we're really, really pleased with. I think that's a really great landing point to then say, well, actually, if you enjoyed it, did you know that the entire production was made on an average age of 22 with £1,100? And then that kind of follows up in the conversation of, can you please give us some more money? which is always, you know, always a contesting point. But yeah, I think a lot of people have seen us for you know, who we want to be and how we want to be represented. And hopefully it's not the end of it.
You've got the stories as a whole. I mean, we've talked a little bit about running themes. You go back to some themes that you've addressed in previous films as well. Specifically, This World We Live In deals a lot with hyper-masculinity and wearing facades. I think you kind of double down on those with some of the films here, particularly with I think it's White Light.
Yeah.
What kind of led you to telling stories that focused on the facade and how that leads to sort of the degradation of the genuine self, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that does. And that's you know, that's really interesting. We're hearing someone else kind of verbalize that, because I've kind of had it in my head but never really could verbalize that physically. So that, thank you for doing that, because that made me feel really, really great. But yeah, I think the thing that led me to the idea of exploring deception and deceit and that kind of hyper presence of being is because I think when we did This World We Live In now 4 years ago, which is crazy to think about, things have changed an awful lot in those years. You know, the technology has become so much more reliant. And, you know, we've now, well, in that space, we had a president and politics who erred on the side of falsehoods and deception. Mm. I don't know if I can say that, but that.
Oh, no, please do say it.
Okay, great. Love that. and I think it's, you know, there's a big problem right here right now for young people, and this is something that we really want to tackle. And so the issue, the episode that you mentioned, White Light, which explores identity and physical online presence, we want to question the audience as to, well, how far do we go as a society before we said, this actually needs to stop?
Yeah. So what have some of the biggest challenges been in terms of finding people who were on board with that and being willing to go to some of the places that the characters have to go in some of these stories? What were some of the biggest challenges there?
The big issue with trying to get a lot of people involved in a project, which on paper, for example, White Light, which is mostly involved on a computer screen, that was an incredibly difficult script to read and kind of picture.
Mm.
And so it all came down to trust, I think. It all came down to finding actors who believed in what we were doing and knew that we would be able to execute it as an organization with Oxygen. Is we create really safe spaces for people, for actors and for our crew, where we can say, you know, this is why we're doing this. It's not gratuitous in the sense of, you know, we want to do it. This is why we're doing it. Do you agree? And it's a collaborative process.
Yeah.
So all of the actors involved were involved in the writing of their story, because I'd never want to kind of dictate what I want done, because right. I think it has to be a collaborative process, because no one's getting paid anything. Everyone's working on it completely voluntarily. And so at the end of the day, it has to be a collaborative process. Everyone has to have a stake in it.
So how did that writing process come about then? So was it the actors that came up with the ideas, or you came up with the ideas and then developed it with the actors? What was sort of the writing process for that?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a little bit different for each episode. And actually when we started the series, we never started it with a series in mind. I actually started it with just the first episode. It's always the case, isn't it? You always start with something small and then it snowballs. But yeah, I had a conversation with Jack Parr, who's the lead actor in the first one, who's been a regular collaborator with us.
Yeah. And
he mentioned, you know, he'd put something up on his Instagram story where he'd said, he put a screenshot of an email that he got from someone saying, we've hacked your webcam, we've seen you do some things, that you probably don't want other people knowing about. Give us £5,000 and it won't see the light of day. And it was a scam. It's obviously a scam. But they had his password that they wrote in the email. They attached certain images and stuff that made it look like, you know, they perhaps gained access to webcam. And I just thought that is, firstly, it's terrifying. But yeah, secondly, yeah, that's great. That's like such a great story. because, you know, and then it progressed as like, well, you know, obviously Jack is he's had so much success from his acting work, but I thought, what if it's someone who is of a huge success, like someone who's, you know, verified across all platforms and has been on a Netflix show or something like that? What would happen then? Like, what would their agent's response be? What would happen? And when we wrote it, we just planted it right in one room and one conversation over a phone. And Jack was really involved in the kind of the back and forth with that. But then all of the other episodes after that, because I couldn't help myself by creating other stuff, I usually came up with the idea of, like, for example, I've got an idea of an escort who hooks up with this guy in a hotel suite while he's in a conference, and one of them dies. And I just want to kind of look at that, what happens there. And so then I'd come to people with an idea like that. But for example, the fifth episode, Blacklight, which looks at incels, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Mad is inceldom, and I've learned an awful lot, which I don't think I'm ever going to unlearn. But that came from Charlie Harris, the actor involved in that. He'd come to me with this idea and said, I think this is a really, really great thing to explore and to look at, and I think it'd be a massive challenge for me as an actor to play someone who does have this level of derangement and dislike for women. And I thought, that's a really great idea, let's look at it. So
yeah,
you know, it was just kind of being open to anything and everything. When Charlie, the lead actor in it, brought it up about the theme of incels and inceldom, I came in with I'd heard of the word, and that's probably about as far as I'd got. Like, I didn't really understand a lot of it. And so that was probably in about the November of 2019. And then we filmed it in January 2020. So I had 2 months over Christmas. It was a very strange Christmas, just being on these forums and essentially ingraining myself in a community which is, I think, on the furthest extreme away from me. It was really eye-opening to just see the scale of how big this community, if you can call it that, is. And the thing that Charlie did so brilliantly, in, as you say, is he performed it so poignantly and really subtly, because this is the thing, is these characters, these real-life humans, are not showy, they're not outrageous, they're not exaggerated, they are the person on the street that you see pretty much every day, the person that, you know, that there are hundreds and thousands of people like this, who, and like Adam the character, and Charlie did a wonderful job of tapping into this side of humanity that's just underground and hidden. And I think this is the thing about it, again, going back to exposure, is it feels like it's been underground for too long, and not enough people are talking about it, because realistically, there is no way of shutting it out. As soon as you shut one site down, they'll find another place to come up.
To gather, yeah.
And the really scary thing is they have got their claws deep into the roots of teenage boys across the world, and it's a really scary environment, because being on those sites probably once a day for 2 months, I could see how addictive it was, and how actually, when you look at what they're saying, even though it's monstrously bad and kind of, you know, really, really dangerous to society and women, they were being very supportive of people. So if someone came on saying, I have you know, I'm feeling really depressed, they'd come on and gather around that person and really support them. And I thought, that's quite interesting, that's quite nice. And they have built this insane community that feels very, very real and very cohesive, but could also really destabilize the entire kind of structure of it. And the thing is, there have been many, many cases of terrorism or death, and kind of, you know, people being killed, women being killed by groups who identify as incels and have written 100-page manifestos about inceldom. But for some reason, we're still not talking about it. And I think we've come on too long to be scared of people like that. And so hopefully, this is what Blacklight does, is that you're meant to be very uncomfortable when you're watching it, while also realizing that this is someone who's very real and exists in an abundance, which is, you know, not the nicest thought, but
but an interesting one and an important one to tackle, because I think, again, going back to running themes, a lot of the personal issues that a lot of the protagonists have in the films across the series come from having urges that aren't in and of themselves terrible things, but either because they don't know how to communicate them or society doesn't want to hear it, then those things become repressed. And the more they become repressed, they get out eventually in some way, shape or form, and it generally tends to come out in an unhealthy way or a threatening way. You know, when people are not able to honestly express themselves, and we as a society don't create the space in which that can be done, it's easier said than done, obviously. But if we're not able to approach someone's thought process without making them feel judged, then they'll go somewhere where they can escape that feeling of judgment, or where they can find that support that society itself doesn't offer, as you mentioned.
Exactly.
You
know,
despite the fact that they were saying terrible things, when they expressed some form of vulnerability or pain or something like that, then they did find people there that would support them and would help them. That in and of itself is a nice thing, but it's being done in the service of a horrendous outlook and attitude, particularly quite often, sadly, with regard to women as well. So does this aim to get people talking about, or toying with the idea at least, of having conversations that are uncomfortable in order to relieve the repression that leads to this kind of unhealthy behavior?
I like to think so. I think, you know, in my immediate community and people who are physically around me talking about these things, because realistically a lot of our crew didn't know about incels and inceldom as well, and that was a whole, you know, everyone had to research it themselves as well and understand that. And I think what I'd like to see is that people do recognize that opening up and talking is not a weak thing to do. It's not a bad thing to do. And I think it can be absolutely terrifying, but what I guess we're trying to show is the how terrifying it is if you don't speak and if you don't open up. This is the end result that often comes about. And I think that is shown most prominently in the fourth episode, Starlight, which is set in the 90s, because that's at a point where history dictates that they can't speak. And I guess in some way regional, because they're the two lads from Liverpool in the 90s who kind of have this really enigmatic pull to one another and just can't find the right words to voice it. And I think that's a really physical thing, of because whereas all the other episodes are a bit more, they don't want to do it or they can't do it because it, you know, there's some other thing, like them being a celebrity or them being an escort or whatever it is. These two lads are normal, they're average lads in the 90s, and it's just because of the backdrop of AIDS and you know, the Section 28, and again the real community family environment of Liverpool that just means these two boys just don't have the vernacular to be able to say I love you. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And And then you see, obviously, at the end of the film, no spoilers, but you do see the impact that that has on these two characters. And if you're anything like me, you're screaming at them just to be like, just say that you love him. And, you know, that's kind of what we wanted to bring about, is just to show that the end result is something that can be avoided if only people spoke and if only people shone a light on things. I think that's, you know, again, that's the series of light, isn't it? Everything is about exposure and opening up and kind of revealing things.
Yeah, I'm not going to go any further because, you know, I could talk to you about this for the next hour at least. But
thank you. No, please do.
in the interest of avoiding spoilers and getting people to actually watch it and formulate their own opinions, we're going to hold that one up there. But the link to find A Series of Light is in the episode notes of this episode. So follow that, give it a watch, get back in touch with us via Cameo Launch and let us know what you thought of it. Get in touch via the social media outlets for Oxygen Films and for Gage as well, and let him and the team know what you thought about it all. So we'll include links to their socials in the episode notes as well. So moving on to your short film pick. Gage, do you want to tell us what it was and give us a brief rundown as to what it's about?
Yes, yeah, I'll do my very best. So this is called Baby, which was released in 2000. I believe it was a BFI and Channel 4 partnership. It was directed by a man called Wiz, that's W-I-Z, but I think his full name is Andrew John Whiston, but I think he goes by Wiz. And it stars Ben Whishaw, who's kind of grown in celebrity since its release. He's obviously voices Paddington and stars in James Bond, but in this film he's a teenage boy who kind of has an experience at a swimming pool where he's just exploring his own kind of paranoia, I think, in some way, but also just his general sexual encounters and just him growing up. It's adolescence, isn't it? Yeah. It's adolescence in 11 minutes.
So what is it about this film that kind of stands out for you? What drew you to it and what makes it keep coming back into your head whenever you're thinking of a film that really really reaches you?
Yeah, so I watched this film, I think I'd have been about 16, 15, I think, maybe. And it was the first film that kind of really struck me as, oh my God, I'm being seen. Like, this is something that I'm watching that is queer. It's gay. And as someone growing up in the north of England on a council estate who is gay and didn't really have any people around him who identified as queer or gay, this was like the first time where I was like, oh, okay, this is it. This is me. And it was really, I don't know, it was really powerful and really overwhelming. And I think this is the one film that made me realize that film has such a power to tell stories, firstly, but also just to be able to see, to have people being able to see themselves on the screen. And I think it's an inherent gut feeling of, okay, no, this is for me. This is a safe space where I can watch this film and be represented. And it's just such an overwhelming feeling. And I think what's really nice about Baby is it's actually described as a documentary, even though it's clearly not. But I love the fact that it is described as a documentary because it is just so true to life. It's just these little snapshots and vignettes where I think a lot of people will be able to relate to and see themselves. And you, as you watch it, there's so much tension, there's so much energy, there's so much, you know, my heart, I was watching it again the other day, just so before this podcast, and my heart was like in my chest beating so fast because I was like, this is, you know, I'm terrified watching it. And I think it just really encapsulates teenage angst and adolescence very well, and in a way that I don't think I've ever seen before or since.
Yeah, I found it really interesting because going into it, I'd never heard of it, and it's only when I did a little bit of research into Wiz, I realised I'd been watching his work for most of my young adult life.
Yeah.
You know, he's done videos for Kasabian, Oasis, Emily mm-hmm. Sandé. He's one of the sort of like, most preeminent music video directors in the UK. Mm-hmm. And you can see the sort of foundations of his visual storytelling style in that film. And as you say, there's no narrative per se, but mm-hmm. there is a definite psychological journey that is, mm-hmm. that is mapped there. And while the style of it is very abstract and, you know, it's not structured in that sort of typical mainstream cinematic way, it does use things like the male gaze, and it uses things like wandering thoughts, and it's almost sort of a visual representation of a person's stream of consciousness. Even if you're thinking about a particular thing, you know, your mind will veer left and right and kind of go off in little tangents and stuff, even if you do end up then coming back to the main sequence of thoughts that you were having. And what it kind of communicated to me is, you know, you start with somebody who's very much in a state of confusion about who they are. And when it comes to things like identity, particularly sexual identity, the thing that is interesting to me is that people generally aren't, I say people generally, I don't know, but I think quite often you might find that people aren't confused about who they are, they're confused about who they're supposed to be.
Yes.
And if, you know, taking this film as an example, you know, he's watching people in the swimming pool and he sees a guy and he's like really, you know, really fit, really healthy, good looking, all that kind of stuff. And he kind of recoils from that. But the way the camera kind of focuses on the person he's looking at, he's clearly enjoying looking at this person. But as soon as he knows that, you know, that he's staring at him, he's like, I shouldn't be doing this. It's like, it's not necessarily, oh, he caught me looking. It's, I shouldn't be doing it. And, you know, as the story kind of goes on, there's a really interesting sort of frantic and frenetic editing style that gets used as well, that kind of shows a real sort of internal chaos as as this person is unable to kind of really get to grips with who they are supposed to be.
It's interesting seeing, having watched it recently for the first time in a while, and realizing, oh no, this has definitely had an impact on me, my art and my film work. And in fact, I remember when we with the film I did, the feature film before the series, the lead actor in that, Adam Ayadi, I was telling him about Baby, and I was like, oh, it's such a great film. This is exactly kind of the type of thing I was wanting. And he just looked at me and went, you do know I know Wiz, like, is a friend of mine. And I was so starstruck.
No way.
I was like, he completely energized my youth and my growing up and my sexual kind of awakening as a boy. He sent Wiz some of my work. And I was floored. It was like, it was
amazing.
I think that's kind of how much I hold Baby to esteem. That's not to say that it's without its flaws. I'm assuming the team obviously behind it see their own flaws as well. But it's really held up after 20 years. And I think that's probably the one film, if I had to say, that's had the biggest impact on me as a filmmaker and as a human.
Right. I will say, I mean, you touched a little bit on the fact that it isn't a flawless film. Mm-hmm. And I would go so far as to say it's definitely not for everyone.
No, definitely not.
It's definitely not family viewing, let's put it out. But
no.
No. But at the same time, you know, there are things in there that I think it's important for people to be able to look at it and evaluate as an individual,
I just want to touch on some of the cinematography, because it's just so spectacular.
Mm.
Especially there's some shots in a swimming pool where it's split between watching him swimming and then watching the girl that he's swimming after.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of the use of water between the mid-frame point of kind of seeing underwater and seeing above the water.
Mm.
It's just so clever. It's just really cleverly done. That presents it in a way of like, coming back to what you said about kind of not being seen. It's like seeing the surface level of what we're meant to see and what we're meant to appreciate and look at. But then the underwater bit that's kind of a bit secretive, that's a bit hidden, that's no one's meant to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, I think it's a very cleverly crafted film, despite its flaws.
Yeah. So what is it that you were able to pick up from that you've then been able to apply to your own work?
I think I'd like to hope, and especially going in the future, because I know this is something that I am always trying to work on, is showing and not telling. Because I think that's a really important tool, and especially for filmmakers, that's something that's like our one advantage, that we can show things without necessarily saying what it is that you want the audience to see. And Baby does this brilliantly, where it presents so many super complex themes about religion, about sex, about growing up, about drugs, a million things that is so detailed and explicit in its when it looks at it, but then doesn't say anything about it. And I hope that that's something I have taken a little bit into some of my work, and hopefully in the future is something I'll respond to and take from it as well.
It's a really good pick. A really good pick from a filmmaking perspective, from a social perspective. I think it's a fantastic film to look at, to study, and to kind of make your own judgments in terms of what it means to you personally. Clearly it had an effect on you, and if it's had any part in leading you to the films you've then subsequently been able to make, then I'd say it's done its job, frankly. So what is it that have you got any projects in development? Is there anything that you're aiming to work on next?
Yes, I mean, again, one of the silver linings of the lockdown and the pandemic that we're in at the moment, is that I've had time to create, I've had time just to kind of disappear from the world a bit and just look at what I'm feeling, because I think that's kind of the backbone of a lot of the stories that we tell.
Mm.
And we are currently working on the second season of A Series of Light.
Excellent.
So we start producing that. We are on set 2 weeks today. from this recording. Which is December 2020 for anyone listening in the future, and then we will premiere that in July 2020. So that is something we're working on at the moment. It follows on from the first season in the exact same order, so sequelizing the anthology episodes in the exact same order. So for example, episode 3 in season 2 follows on episode 3 in season 1, so right. You can kind of watch it downwards rather than a long ways, which is quite fun.
That's interesting.
We'll see if it works. I hope it will. So we're starting the first episode we're doing this time is the sequel to Starlight, the Scouse 90s one. So we journey into 1997. Diana's just died. That's where we pick up 2 years after the first time we saw them. So great. It should be good fun.
Amazing. Fantastic. Great. Definitely looking forward to that. Please do keep us in the loop. And I imagine that's going to Amazon as well, is it?
It is, yeah. Hopefully, unless there's another pandemic or something else that comes, or aliens or whatever.
I'm touching all the wood in the office at the moment.
It should be premiering on Amazon early July next year, so 2021.
Fantastic. And anyone listening / watching, as we mentioned before, the links to the socials for Oxygen Films are all included in the episode notes. So do head over to to check them out and stay up to date with developments on that new series and check out some of their old films as well. You can also find our reviews of previous Oxygen Films productions on Cameo Launch. So if you head over to cameolaunch.com/reviews, you'll be able to catch some of our previous reviews there. But Gage, thank you so much for joining us. It's been absolutely great catching up with you again.
And you too, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, Nigel. Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. And best of luck. And we look forward to catching season two.
Thank you.
Cheers.
That was Gage Oxley, writer and director of A Series of Light. Our thanks to him for joining us, and we look forward to the second season this July. Well, that's it for our final Filmmaker's Choice episode of the year. Join us for our next episode, where George and I will be compiling our top 10 reviewed short films of 2020. We're super excited to revisit our favourite films of the year and doubtless label each other charlatans over our differing choices, because the internet. If you want to compile your own list, head over to cameolaunch.com/reviews and check out all of the incredible films we've reviewed this year. If you feel like sharing your own top 10, then you can reach us via our socials at Cameo Launch on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also sign up to our newsletter over on cameolaunch.com to be kept up to date with new podcast episodes, reviews, and additions to our online shop. Speaking of our online shop, head over to cameolaunch.com/shop and have a browse through our selection of cult movies, classic filmmaker box sets, books, screenplays, and more. Pick up a little something for yourself or the film lover in your life. Thanks so much for joining us. If you want to get notifications of more episodes, subscribe to our podcast by heading over to cameolaunch.com/podcast, where you can subscribe via platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many more. If you want to catch us in video form, then head to our YouTube channel and subscribe, and don't forget to hit the bell for notifications of new videos. We sincerely hope that you are finding ways to enjoy this festive period despite the lockdown and new tier impositions. Hang in there, stay as positive as you can, it will end. Reach out to people for support if you need it, and check in on your friends and family if you can. In times like these, a little goes a long way. But if nothing else, please stay safe, look after each other, and we'll see you next time.